Hello and welcome to Criminal Justice Knowledge. My name is Natalie Miller and I'm very pleased to welcome my guest today, Professor Stephen Duggan. He is the professor in and coordinator of the Police Foundations program online and the Police Leadership Liaison for Humber, and also sits on the Ontario Chiefs of Police Association. Thank you so much for coming on today, Steve.
You're welcome.
So we're going to be talking about youth crime today. So what encompasses youth crime? What is it exactly? What's some definitions, I suppose?
Well, that's a good start, and I could easily say, well, it's when a youth, someone between the ages of 12 and 17, not
right.
including 18, commit a criminal offense or an offense known
right.
to law or an non-indictable offense or an offense against some regulation or statute. So there we are. There's youth crime. Thanks very much for having me out. Well, of course,
there's so much to it, right?
The easy way when you take a look at it. I think you basically have to take a look at two areas. And the first area is, well, okay, if youth crime only deals with youth between the ages of 12 and 18, not including 18, but 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17.
Right.
What about the youth before 12? Well, what if you have a 10-year-old boy who steals a chocolate bar from a store, takes without consent something? They cause something to be moved. We all know what the definition of theft is under the criminal code. All right, well, do they commit a crime? Does the 10-year-old commit a crime? Well, no. In Canada, they don't. They do not commit a crime. They commit no offense known to law. Well, that's odd. Because, well, what if that youth, rather than stealing a chocolate bar, kills somebody? What if they kill somebody? Do they commit a crime then? No, they don't. They're a child in need of protection. They fall under a provincial statute, and this is right across Canada. Doesn't make any difference where you are. It falls right across Canada where they come under the auspices of the Health Ministry. Child and Family Services is basically where they fall under. So it's a child in need of assistance, in need of help. Why are they in need of help? Because no good child would steal something. They know that's wrong. No good child would kill another person. They know that's wrong. Therefore, it's the health system that has to look after it. So, when we take a look at youth crime, the reason for this story is when we take a look at youth crime, it's very difficult to actually put a finger on anything. We know by definition it can only occur between 12 and 18.
Right.
Right up to that. We know by definition. We know by definition that crime is really an offense against the criminal code. We have a separate act called the Youth Criminal Justice Act, or as the Crown Attorneys like to say, You Can't Jail Them Act, in Canada, that go coast to coast. And what is that act? That's really a rule book or a procedural book that says this is how you should deal with youth who have committed an offense under the criminal code. It's a rule book for how to treat them. It's not this is an offense under the Youth Criminal Justice Act. No, that's not what it is. Okay. So if you take a look at Stats Canada, and Stats Canada from the time that I took a look at it, basically pegs the criminal activity from 12 to 24, and that's the highest peak of any criminal activity really in Canada. It's also North American, 12 to 24. After 24 years, people start to settle out. So the curve, if you're going to take a look at it, the curve starts to skew to the right. So in other words, there's fewer people committing crime after 24 years of age. Well, why is that, you say? Because they have become smarter, they've been in jail. Why is that? Well, it's quite simply that they develop spouses, they develop boyfriend, girlfriends, they develop spouses, they develop children, they are working. They've got regular societal pressures that will cause them to not turn back to crime.
Right.
So thinking that way, then just leave the kids to do what they're going to do, and then we're good. Because as the population ages, you're going to have lower crime. It's done. Well, there's always little skews and things like that that'll pop up, and certain individuals will commit it. So we come back to youth crime. So in Canada, right across Canada, we take a look at it. Are there enough youth facilities in order to treat offenders who are youth, that fall under the Youth Criminal Justice Act? Are there enough offenders? Well, in Ontario, there are five. There's five institutions that will deal with them. One is the Cell App Center. It's one of the most secure in Canada. That will get youth from across Canada sent there in order to deal with them. And that's in Oakville. Wow. That's the CELABS center out in Oakville. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the most secure ones in Canada. Mm-hmm. So when you take a look at it, it is not infinitesimal. So in other words, you only have a certain number of beds. So if these people, you don't have the beds for these offenders, because that is the bulk of your people, well, where do they go? Well, they go to outreach, they go to various group homes, they go into the system where they either learn to relieve criminal behavior, or they can entrench criminal behavior and cause them to reoffend and reoffend and reoffend.
Right.
Okay. One of the Canada's top clinical psychologists is a chap by the name of Dr. Fred Matthews. Mm-hmm. Dr. Fred Matthews did a lot of studies under the Central Toronto Youth Services. And I had a chance to work with him back in the late 80s when I was a police officer in Toronto, and really studying youth crime and youth behavior. And Dr. Matthews basically puts his youth crime into a cycle, if you will. So youth are constantly reevaluating. They're constantly reevaluating their position in life. And you think back to the time when you would go through with your peers, or you're hanging out with your peers, and you something would happen in the group, something broke, or whatever the case may be. You would reevaluate right then, whether you knew it or not. You'd subconsciously reevaluate, ooh, is that right? Do I really want to do that? Did I get satisfaction out of that? If the pulls from your family network grouping were stronger than your peer group, chances are you would spin away from the group. Mm-hmm. But if you said, no, that was really fun, we'll stay in it, and we'll keep doing the activity again. As you got more entrenched in that setting with your group peers and the fun that you would have, two things would happen. As I said, you would become more entrenched in it. And the other thing, in order to get you a thrill, is that you would do things that were worse than you did before.
Right.
So you would start to see a pattern. So it's much the same as if water flows down a basin, flows out of a basin. It flows clockwise out of a basin in this part of the world, this hemisphere. Yeah. It flows clockwise. If you're in the southern hemisphere, it flows counterclockwise.
Yeah.
And that would lead us on to adolescent youth gangs or youth criminal behavior. We'll deal with that in a little while. But when you take a look at youth crime, what are the most common offenses? Well, youth really, unbeknownst to most studies, and most studies will take a look at most crime committed in Toronto, you're looking at theft. That's the majority of the crime. The second highest crime in Toronto is assault, and that's adult crime. So you're looking at some form of theft, form of assault. Same as true with youth, except it's done sometimes on a greater scale or sometimes on a lower scale than as an adult. So in other words, as they go 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 24. So what youth crime is really developing into now is that youth or groups of youths are starting to band together for a common good. So in other words, are they gangs? Well, what is a gang? It's really a group of friends.
Right.
A gang is really a group of friends that get together and do things together, that hang out together, they go to the movies together, they go to concerts together, they go to they play video games or do whatever they do. They do all this, and I'm dating myself here, but they do all this sort of stuff together.
Yeah.
And they are going to have interactions with other groups or other adults or whatever the case may be that may be positive or negative. So, all right. So, and an infraction occurs, people blame the youth.
Right.
So, when we look at youth crime, we have to look at, well, what factors should we bring into play? Do we go like the Americans and go on the Pennsylvania grid sentencing system, where if you do this as a youth, then you're going to get this long in custody? If you increase it a bit, it's like playing hopscotch. You go to the next square, did that, and you used a weapon. Well, you're going a little bit longer, and you're going to do that. And that's how the Americans sentence. Or is it more rehabilitation? Do we basically take a look at healing circles from the indigenous people? Do we look at healing circles? Are they effective? Do we try and keep the people out of youth jails? I had the good fortune in my policing career, when the Young Offenders Act came into play, to be one of the police service representatives to go to Ottawa to listen to about the Young Offenders Act.
Right.
And really, it was a pretty good piece of legislation. It's similar to the Youth Criminal Justice Act.
Right.
Similar to that, but in some respects, it was more rehabilitative. So taking a look at, let's keep them out of the system. And
yeah.
That's really the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
But society at the same time listens to it and sees it and says, oh my God, they start labeling, they start basically putting their social control theories against all this sort of stuff and saying, oh my God, we've got to do something, we have a problem.
Right.
So youth crime, while it is, while people may think, oh, it's only kids experimenting, it's so crucial that police services front and load their preventative strategies. So in other
right.
words, you've got to pay more money up front. If you can stop people, so as soon as they come in contact with the system at 12 or 13 or 14 in that youth time, you stop them there,
right.
then you're going to prevent, you're going to lower the far end of them committing crime from 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24,
right.
which is what you want. But you have to spend the dollars. We don't have the facilities in Canada. We just don't. We don't have the facilities in Ontario in order to treat them because it takes long-term intervention.
Right. It's not just a quick in and out.
It's not just a quick in and out. Oh, yeah, we'll do this and put the child on probation and that's fine.
Another
and the child
will
never do it again.
Right.
It becomes the revolving door. So, and again, as Dr. Fred Matthews said, there has to be some significant, and everybody will go through it, a revelation. Something will happen that is significant to the individual that will cause them to reassess their position within the group.
Right.
If the sanctions applied or the intervention applied, not don't mean jail, I don't mean that, but
right.
if the sanction or intervention applied is applied relatively at the same time that the bad behavior or the criminality occurs, the greater the likelihood, the greater the percentage that the person will not reoffend. Always will have the exceptions to the rule.
Exactly.
But then those exceptions will be smaller and smaller, and they won't continue.
So that's the way to go in terms of looking at youth crime and
before and youth crime in itself. Before we get into any other forms of it,
just the
youth crime general itself. It's something that students, as they move into careers in the justice system, that you have to start really thinking to yourself, all right, you're going to have to concentrate more in dealing with those people when you attend calls, if you're a police officer,
right.
when you work with youth in transition. You have to work with them and spend the time there. You just can't. It isn't. There is no quick fix solution for youth crime.
Just as we always hear, youth and children are an investment.
That's right.
And we always need to make sure we're investing the time
That's
and effort.
Right. That's right.
Thank you so much for coming on today and speaking with us, generally speaking, of youth crime. Until next time, I'm Natalie Miller, and this has been Criminal Justice Knowledge.